What if the battles, the conflict, the constant need to correct your child or get them to eat all of their food or behave just weren't necessary? What if parenting, especially of strong-willed children, could actually feel calm, connected, and even joyful? In this episode of Born to Know, I sit down with Kirk Martin, founder of Celebrate Calm, who has helped over 1 million parents in more than 20 countries repair relationships, diffuse conflict, and bring deep harmony into the home. Kirk has cracked the code on raising confident, creative, and emotionally grounded kids without micromanaging or constantly correcting their behavior. His approach flips traditional parenting on its head, not through discipline and obedience, but through trust, presence, and emotional regulation, starting with you, the parent. In our conversation, we dive into why children mirror energy and how to shift what they reflect. The phrases that build confidence in your child while calming your own nervous system. How letting go of control actually creates more cooperation, and why some of the most misunderstood, strong-willed kids often grow into the most exceptional adults. As you listen, I invite you to pause and reflect. How do you define respect when it comes to children? What do good and bad behaviors really mean or reveal? This episode is not just about parenting, it's about healing, about connection, and about breaking the generational cycles that keep us trapped in control instead of grounded in love. If you're enjoying this podcast, take just 5 seconds to leave a review and share the show with a friend. And thanks again for being here. Hi, Kirk. Thank you so much for joining me.
Ayla, I am super excited to be here.
I've been looking forward to this conversation for some time now. I've been following your work and listening to your podcast. And for everyone listening, I will share all of those links and the resources that we talk about in the show notes. But I've been following your work and it's been so validating, let's say, as a parent and as an individual who was once a child and who still has an inner child within me, right? And so I really wanted to have this conversation and share what you're up to and explore ways that we can redefine our perception of the power struggle with our children, and we can redefine our perception of what parenting is today. This idea might run a little bit counter to how many of us were raised, I guess, depending on the generation, but you've said something multiple times in different contexts and settings, that we really focus on wanting our child to change, right? We get frustrated and we want to kind of manipulate and alter their behavior and what they're up to so that we can feel a little bit more at ease or in control. And you've said, well, how about we actually change ourselves? Right. And this is what you hear in like relationship advice and very like high level relationship transformation is like, you don't change your partner, you change you. But then when it comes to kids, it's like all about dominance and control for the most part. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about that concept.
Ayla, that's how I was raised. Like, my dad was career military. So it was like, you fear and intimidation, my way or the highway approach, and your goal as a parent is to get your child to behave. And so that's the path I started with our strong-willed son. And you know, with strong-willed kids, like, you can go the harsh route with them or try to intimidate them. They are tough kids. Like, you can double down and they will like bring it back even quad they will quadruple their resistance to you. And so it finally dawned on me two things. One is there's only one person in life that I can control, and that's myself. And the quickest way to change your child's behavior is to first control your own. Because when we try to control our kids' behavior, well, one, we're being responsible for them, right? Because in some ways, like our lectures are filled with all this anxiety. I don't see you behaving the right way, and you're not making the right choices, and you need to try your hardest and do your best at everything. And there's all this anxiety that comes out in us, and they will resist that because they know they can't really please us or satisfy our anxiety about their future. And I want parents to know, like, the anxiety is normal, especially with a strong-willed child. You're looking at you can have a preschooler who can't sit still in circle time. And now you're projecting into the future of like, how's our daughter going to be successful? She can't follow directions. Or a middle school age boy sitting in the same hoodie sweatshirt for like 12 straight nights playing video games. You're going to think, who is going to marry this child? Who is going to hire this child? Am I a failure as a parent? And then all that anxiety dumps all over your child. And by trying to control their behavior, in some ways, we're becoming responsible for their life. And so what I learned is, when I step back from lecturing, micromanaging, trying to control the outcome, it actually gave our strong-willed son space to step up and be responsible for himself. Mm-hmm. And one of the insidious parts is, if we're always kind of micromanaging, then when they do something wrong, it's like we take credit for it, right? Like, well, that's because I was such a good parent. And now it's saying, hey, I believe you're capable of handling this, and I'll give you the tools and I'll model it for you. I'm not going to try to control and manipulate you into doing that. And I think it's better for the child and for a parent. It is so much more enjoyable than trying to constantly, maybe you can relate to this probably. It's like our parents, they didn't do everything right by any means, and they weren't connected to us. But they also gave us some space to learn how life works. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it feels like, as a modern day parent, we can engineer our child's future. Like, if we just get them into the right school and we do this right and we feed them all organic meals, they're gonna, like, it's like we can kind of control the outcome of their future. And it just leads to so much stress for everyone.
Yeah. You said two really striking things there. One is that if we can model the behavior, because there's this like dissonance where parents want the child to behave a certain way, yet they're not modeling it. It's like, do as I say, not as I do, you know, like the classic, like, don't raise your voice at me, you know, and they're yelling at the kid to calm down. And it's like,
and then the child's like, my son said to me once, Ayla, I was yelling. I was like, you need to calm down. And I have a very strong-willed son with a really good mouth on him. And he said, well, apparently you haven't mastered that skill yet. And I was like, oh, and now I wanted to like go after him harder. But I had to realize, you're absolutely right. I'm asking you to do things that I haven't actually done. And if I can just say this so I don't forget it, it's kind of a deeper thing. There was a moment once when we had this big kind of blow up, and I remember it hit me. What I was really telling my son in that moment was, son, I need you to behave and do exactly what I tell you to do, because if you don't behave, I'm not sure I can behave. And you don't want to see me angry, right? Like, that was a pivotal moment of, I need my son to listen to me so that I don't lose it.
Yeah, because many of us don't have the capacity yet to regulate our own nervous system. So we need the conditions around us to be just right so that we don't lose it. And that we maintain that really fragile control that we've, you know, curated over so many years. And the other thing that you said was like, creating the conditions for them, right? Because it's like we're guiding them, you know, we're offering these experiences, but it's like, are we creating the conditions to give them the space to figure it out? It's, you know, like the helicopter parenting, that famous term where it's like, I'm going to engineer everything. I'm not going to let them get hurt. I'm going to prevent them from any type of failure. I'm going to prevent them from experiencing this or this or this. And then the child, you know, what I've seen now entering college, I mean, I know personally some 18 and 19 year olds, they can't even fry their own egg. They can't figure out when to eat. They're not even sure when to really eat because they've never been supported in just going with the instinct of, this is actually when I'm hungry. I'm going to listen to my body, or this is when I need sleep, because everything has been organized just so. And so have you seen, you know, over the arc of, I know, I'd love to hear more about the story of you and your wife opening up your home to children so that they could experience a different type of environment. So I know you've been doing this work a while. Have you seen that that type of hyper control and organization over a child's life actually disables them in many ways from being able to be out in the world and be self-sufficient?
Absolutely. And just on a daily basis of kids not trusting themselves, kids being afraid of failing, right? Because we have this, you know, one of the advantages we have is we have access, we know everything that our kids do. Whereas like, I'm a lot older than you, Ayla, but when I was a kid, our parents didn't know where we were half the time.
Yeah.
Which was a lot easier, right? We were just out in the neighborhood. But now you know every single thing. You get alerts from school. And so it gives, like you said, that illusion of control over their environment. And so I think the big thing, two things I focus on are dealing with your own anxiety about your child's future, about their present, how they're doing, because we all get that anxiety of like, I really want to be a good parent and I love my child and I want my child to be happy and successful. So I love that phrase of, it always stuck with me, I need to step back so that they can step up and be responsible. It's a form of trust with your kids. It is a form of, I also love this phrase, oh, I believe you're capable of handling that. See, it's a really nice, hey, I love this phrasing. Of course that assignment is difficult, but I believe you're capable of doing it, even if you struggle. So you're acknowledging that it's hard. Mm-hmm. Instead of like, oh, it's no big deal. If you would just focus, you could get it done. Of course that writing assignment is difficult. Of course this situation with your friend is really difficult. I believe you're capable. And as you begin to speak those words, it gives you more confidence yourself that they are capable. Now, the other part besides anxiety is our own control issues, because we naturally want our kids to do things the way we do them. Mm-hmm. Because that, and you talk and you do such an awesome job with dealing with childhood trauma, but just think, let's say you grew up in a home where there was a lot of chaos. And so you as a child, you don't know what you're doing, but you're like, hey, if I don't get control over some things here and manage my dad's emotions or my mom's and take care of things, then we're going to have chaos here. And then a lot of people that did that, they grow up and become nurses. And like nurses are notoriously great at like controlling the environment and catering to everybody else, but not themselves. And mm-hmm. in your field, right? Social workers, notoriously. So that served you well as a child, because having control kept you safe. So it served you well as a child, but now that you're an adult, you're still doing it and it's backfiring and it sabotages relationships. So I always encourage moms and dads, I'm like, practice imperfection. Like purposefully today, do something imperfect. Leave 2 dishes in the sink overnight without cleaning them. Not 3, because that'll drive you crazy, but 2. That's just right. Small. To learn how to just release that, and you do a better job than I do of this, but releasing that inner child from still having to be responsible for everyone else, for managing the temperature of the home.
Yeah, it sounds like expanding one's nervous system capacity to hold the discomfort, right? So as you leave one dish in the sink and you look around and you're like, okay, everything's still okay. Leave the second dish and you're like, we're still good. So now you're just almost like training the somatic, rewriting the somatic experience for yourself that, there isn't going to be some blow up or chaos, or someone's not going to come in the room and scream if these things aren't done. So we're starting to kind of really untangle, I guess, a lot of these actions. For me, I was chronically organizing drawers and closets. Okay, like I would take everything out of my room. There's photos of it, and my family thought it was cute. Meanwhile, I'm like, and like I was constantly purging things and, that didn't work, things that weren't matching, I'd get rid of them. It was like this whole process, and that was my way. So as I got older, I started training myself to leave piles and messes around when I started doing somatic experiencing work. And it was like, leave that. And when I feel like it, I will clean it. How about that? Like when it feels right to me. So it's a journey, and it can be done with these small steps, like you said, of just leaving the mess, and then seeing how you can actually stay, calm and present in that. And then you start to detach yourself right from the outcome with your child. You say, it's okay to be imperfect. We're not going to do that today.
That is awesome that you did that, because I use that example a lot when life feels like it's out of control. Instead of controlling your child, okay, go and organize a drawer, because I would rather organize the drawer because that gives you some semblance of order inside, right? It feels good because I can't control my spouse and I can't control my kids, but I can make sure my kitchen sink is spotless. But one of the things I would encourage parents to do, try this, and this is hard, and be very patient with yourself because it's going to trigger a lot of things. The next time there is a little bit of chaos in the home, or siblings are fighting, not, beating each other up, but walk into a room and just sit. Literally just sit in the midst of it without feeling the need to fix the situation, right? That's what you did. You sit in that room and you're like, there's a pile over there, and that's irritating me, and that's bugging me. But you sat in it until you get comfortable with not being triggered so much. And I would actually encourage, and I don't know if you agree with this or not, but give yourself space to be triggered a little bit, right? Like it should still irritate you. The goal isn't to get to like, I'm in a complete Zen state all the time and nothing bothers me. It's like, no, I'm frustrated. I'm irritated at my child right now. It is triggering me, but I'm not going to react out of being triggered. So it's okay to feel all those things inside. I was telling Ayla, right before we got on, I did this podcast, recorded this podcast about this incident with my son when he was little. And in the middle of it, it triggered stuff from my childhood with my dad. And I started crying and I was like, oh, where's all this coming from? And so just be patient with yourselves. A lot of, I have so much respect for young parents now. Millennial parents are doing an awesome job, like reparenting themselves, dealing with their childhood wounds so they don't keep passing that along to their kids. So all the parents out there who are doing that, I have enormous respect for you.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up because it's when those triggers are happening, like, oh, my child is triggering me. If we take it a step further, it's actually just that we're remembering something that was most likely an unmet need from our own childhood, and that's why it's like so deeply painful. And the child is just like being themselves, and like in bliss and trying to figure out what this world is about, but they're just mirroring back to us. I can think of a specific example, and maybe you've seen, I'm sure you've seen numerous examples in all your conversations with people, but it's like when you give a child a choice, right? I know certain adults that are deeply triggered by the fact that a child is given a choice, you know, do you want the fish or you want the steak, right? And it's like, well, no, they're just going to eat whatever you make. But it's like, well, if I'm having a friend over for dinner, I might say, hey, I could get salmon or I could get steak. Like, what do you feel like having? So why wouldn't you extend that same like choice to a child, as if, you know? And so they, you know, I remember one of them said to me, he's like, well, I never got the choice. And I said, I'm so sorry that you weren't given those choices. And this is like really triggering you, but it, like, that's not any reason to punish this child and say, you must eat this thing that you don't want to eat. Right. You know, and it's a fine line, I would say, because it's not like I ever say to my daughter, what do you want to eat tonight? And I'll just reorganize my entire 3 hours of preparing dinner to just meet your needs and give you like a Nutella crepe buffet. You know, I'll say like, these are the two options of what I'm making and which would you prefer? Because then she's able to listen to her own body and say, oh yeah, I'd actually like more protein. And that sounds good. My body's needing this now, if it's possible, you know. But would you say that that's something that can come up? Because a lot of people think kids should not have choices. They just need to do exactly, what we're all doing, kind of more of a collectivist standpoint, let's say.
Well, you know what, if I've changed on that food thing, because as I've gotten older, like, I eat what I love eating. So when you said like the Nutella crepe, I was like, I'm coming over for dinner tonight, so I'll eat that, right? Like, but like, every day I make a choice based on what my body is feeling, right? Mm-hmm. So then you're teaching your child healthy habits of like, well, yeah, but again, it's not like, well, what do you want? I'll just go run to the store every day for something different. Right. You can change your mind at 6 o'clock. But what I'd rather do is teach kids how to begin preparing their own meals, yeah. Right? Like, hey, and many of the kids we work with, they're strong-willed kids. A lot of them have anxiety. So all they eat is like mac and cheese and chicken nuggets anyway. So it's not that hard. So there's a balance, like in kind of what we teach. I don't want to be a pushover. I don't want to be like, well, everything revolves around you and whatever you want. So I don't want to go there. By the way, I also encourage parents, if you have a strong-willed child, watch that really sweet tone that parents use nowadays of like talking to their kids like this, because it's fine for your compliant kids. They love it. They will feel snuggly and warm, but compliant kids don't even need parents. They're just going to do the right thing, right? But the strong-willed child, when we use that really sweet tone, I will tell you, it sounds really condescending and patronizing to them. So if I've got a 3-year-old that's strong-willed, or a 13 or 20, I talk to them even matter-of-fact tone. It is very grounding. It is a very respectful tone to them. Hey, here's what's about to happen. And that tone just settles them and grounds them. But I also don't like the old school authoritarian of like, you know what? When I was a kid, you were lucky you got food. You're going to eat what I set in front of you. It's like, okay, you're going a little too far there. So have your boundaries. But I choose every day. Like, we have options for tonight. Some nights my wife will eat something and I'll have something different. Mm-hmm. One night I might just have some cheese, and we've got neighbors who we live out west. And so we've got like fresh venison. I'll have like a little charcuterie thing. Well, that's not a real meal. Yeah, it is. That's what I want tonight. And that's what I'm going to freaking eat. Right. Yeah. And so I like giving kids choices. I like giving kids choices a lot, because we're not raising them to be kids. We're raising them to be adults. And I would just let, hey, here's your choice, and here are the different outcomes that come with those choices. Now you choose. And then I'm just very consistent in not like following through with the consequences, because consequences don't change behavior well. But hey, you have a choice, and here's the outcome. And so I'm going to put boundaries on that. I know I didn't explain that well, but I'm on the same page with you, especially with food.
I mean, I can think of other choices, right? Like, I let my daughter barefoot everywhere. Unless we're going into like downtown.
What kind of mother are you allowing your daughter? But do you ever hear, Ayla, do you ever have like your mom's or grandmother's voice in your head of like, no, a girl's supposed to be dressing appropriate. She should have her shoes on and always look like a... Do you struggle with that?
Funny enough, my mom is like definitely a rebel. And so, you know, she was always like, no, you're going to do it the way you want to do it. You know, kind of like, she wouldn't really say it out loud. It wasn't like, you know, because I looked like a very put together, like my hair was always done. I always had the dress on, you know, with the petticoat and, you know, it was the late 80s. And I was just like, looked like this little doll. But like, meanwhile, I'm like out, like by the end of the night, I'm covered in mud and she didn't care. You know?
So can I ask you questions on your podcast? So with her having that attitude, did that ever lead you to like, oh, I can take advantage of my mother now. I can do whatever I want. Or did that lead you to respect her more, that you stayed within a certain boundary with that freedom?
Well, I guess what it did cultivate within me, as if I reflect on it as an adult, is that I really value women who see me and don't want me to be any different than I am. Mm-hmm. So in my female friendships as an adult, that's the requisite. And if there's any kind of like inauthenticity when it comes to how we're relating, or I see them as inauthentic about how they present themselves in public and then how they are in private, I'm like, no, I need it to be consistent. So right. I think what it showed me about my mom is like the consistency. You're the same person in every room. And also you wouldn't do something behind a closed door that you wouldn't share publicly, right? As far as, you know, you're not going to talk bad about people. Like, so it really created this kind of consistency. Like, if you're not going to say it to that person, you wouldn't say it behind their back, right? And that's really what was cultivated there. There's a lot of other things as far as the environment that made it very unsafe, you know, as far as chaos goes. But that in of itself, it really impacted me to really value, like, I have my own way of doing things, but I never felt like, oh, I'm going to take advantage of her because she just lets me do me. She did have rules, like I had a 9 p.m. curfew until I was a senior in high school. You know, there were certain things that, you know, just were old school Latin, right. Jewish. But when it came to like my expression, no, it was like, oh, yeah, she wants to dye her hair black. Oh, she's going to shave her head. She's okay, you know, and was really like letting me do those things. So I guess she was picking and choosing what I was, you know, could be rebellious about. But it led me to be a mother who was like, I mean, with my daughter, it was like, I did a home birth. I was like, I'm not going to pierce her ears. I'm not going to do anything. You know, I've never even given her antibiotics, which is another conversation. I'm not saying that's the right way. I'm just saying I just never gave her anything that I felt like she couldn't consent to, you know, that was irreversible, let's say. And, you know, she never wanted to wear shoes. I never put them on her. And even now, we walk around the neighborhood and it's very wooded here and the neighbors are like, oh, where's your shoes? You know, and everyone's kind of like upwards of, you know, late 70s and up. And they're like, where's your shoes? And, you know, has she had her tetanus shot? And I'm just like, so funny, because she's just like, looks at them and, you know, she understands now that she does things a little differently.
Right.
Yeah.
Good for your mom. Good for you. That generational stuff that's passed down. Like with the, it'll be interesting to see if you have grandkids if they don't wear shoes. That'll be
right.
Awesome.
Yeah, and it's my whole thing is like when a child feels like the weirder, let's say, and I put that in air quotes, it's like the weirder the child is. For me, that's an indicator that they feel very safe to be themselves.
Ooh, you know what? Can I add something to that?
Yeah.
Talking to someone about this, the strong-willed kids that we work with, they're often very comfortable being different. It's sometimes the parent who's uncomfortable.
Right.
Right. Like, hey, you need to have more friends. Hey, have more friends. And it's like, I don't want more friends. People are irritating. I want to have, one or two very close friends, but I don't want to be popular. I'm okay being alone. I like my alone time because I need a lot of time to process. And sometimes that's understanding who your child is instead of putting your own needs. It's like, no, mom, you need a lot of friends. Have a lot of friends.
Right.
But your child, maybe complete. We have kids who they do better schoolwork if they're allowed to sit underneath their desk in a classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Confined space. It feels safe. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit weird and different. Look, I can fit in socially if I need to, but I'm odd and I'm okay with my oddness because it's not meanness. I just don't care that much. Like, I know I should wear a baseball hat, but at my age now, I don't care. This is how I dress. And I know I saw your other guests. They're always like dressed nicely and stuff. And I was worried about that, but I'm like, I don't care anymore. I want people to hear the content. So plus I got up really early this morning.
I don't know if that's totally true. Dr. Jack Cruz showed up topless. So I get
thank you. I'm better than, hey, this I'm fully covered though, but I don't have shoes on right now. So I do fit into your eco world, but there's something about giving our kids that space and freedom to know you don't have to do it like everybody else does it. And our son is very much like that. I can tell you with the strong will kids, all the traits that irritated us about him when he was a kid are the very traits that now he's a grown adult, make him successful. All the things that we wanted to change, we're like, don't do that. Now we see them in the real world, and it's like those things all blossom. It's a really cool process. So moms and dads, chill a little bit. Your kids are going to be okay. Just model it and give them some space. And the older I get, Ayla, the more I realize, I mean, if I could go back and do it again, I would be so less rigid. There's this thing, you know what it's like when you have little kids, you're like, every decision we make is going to determine our child's future. If I allow her to have this banana right now, she's going to be an entitled child. And it's like, no, right? Why are you laughing? What did that bring up for you?
I just hear echoes of that. So like with, you know, friends from the school, you know, the parents and the obsession with the right summer camp and the obsession with the pre-enrollment for the next year's thing. And then on the wait list for 3 years from now to get into the middle school and the, and I'm always like, whoa, like, you know, so yeah, it just really makes me laugh because there's so much anxiety wrapped up. And like, if I let you have this piece of fruit, you know, after 8 p.m., like you're going to be bouncing off the walls. And then what kind of mother would I be if you, you know, so it's a very real thing what you just said.
Well, I would encourage parents, and I'm pretty, I'm not say tough on this, but I'm older to realize, look, worst case scenario with strong-willed kids, they hate school. It's boring. They know a lot of it's arbitrary. So they do the bare minimum to get by, which will freak you out because they're really bright kids. If you would just apply yourself, you could get a scholarship. You could do all of this. And a lot of the kids we work with, they get to their teen years and they're 16 and they're like, this is dumb. I don't want to do it. So they drop out of school and they get their GED. Because they don't want to do the final 2 years of high school because they don't like being around other kids their own age because they're stupid and boring. What am I going to learn from a 16-year-old boy? Right? I'm not knocking boys, but we're dopes until we're about 40, right? We don't grow up. So he drops out. He gets his GED or she and starts working a job. Well, a lot of our kids are really good in the adult world. They're just not good as kids because the kid world is largely arbitrary, right? Like so much we ask of them is just arbitrary. Like even the food thing. After you're grown up, you can eat when you want what you want.
Right.
And so then he gets a job and starts figuring his life out. And I've worked with a lot of those kids and they grow up and they crush it in the real world. So that whole idea of we have to get them into the right preschool. And I encourage you drop the arbitrary things like, well, by age five, your child should be, well, according to whose standard?
Right.
And then you're going to put all this pressure on your child, but like, oh no, she's not doing this and she's six. I'm like, the job description of a six-year-old, a seven-year-old, is to play and be curious and make messes and be impulsive and not be all that responsible.
Right.
We're putting all these adult, like, well, I'm 40, so you should be exhibiting this these qualities. I'm like, they're just a dopey kid learning how to navigate life. And if you live your life out in front of them, they will eventually follow your lead. They'll have your DNA, but relax a little bit. I hope I just saved some of you tens of thousands of dollars on that special school that you thought was going to make a difference that probably isn't.
Well, yeah, someone thought it was pretty radical recently that I just gave my daughter the choice of where she wanted to go to school. You know, and she visited a few places, and she's, because we used to homeschool, and I asked her if she wanted to keep doing it. And she's like, oh, I kind of like being around other kids, you know, for a certain amount of time and then going home and being alone. She's very strong-willed. And so she really liked the Waldorf school. And she said she primarily liked it because all of their sciences, you know, are observing nature for the most part, and then spending most of the day outside, most other conventional programs, and then all the handwork. She really likes the handwork. And so I was like, okay, you know, and I'll rearrange things so that we can be there and do that and, you know, have that experience. Whereas, you know, other people are like, yeah, but then what happens to the Waldorf child when they need to go to the real world? And I'm thinking, like, did you know that Silicon Valley actually has like the largest amount of hires actually come from a Waldorf and homeschool background, because they are so creative with problem solving and the executive function. And they don't actually have to like rely on the herd mentality to take decisions. So, you know, it's
yeah, what are you thinking, putting your daughter in an environment where she's outside observing things? She needs to be in a structured school classroom being dictated. No, I just did a couple Instagram videos on this about, do you really want, is your highest goal for your child to follow directions or to learn how to make decisions? Because you don't really learn from just doing what, and again, your listeners and followers know the balance here. I'm not like, do whatever you want, but it's in making decisions that you learn, because now you have to say like, okay, I have a choice here. What do I do? And then I'm going to make a wrong decision or a decision that has a negative outcome. Well, good. Well, now I learn how to recognize, okay, that wasn't a great choice. And now I have an outcome that's more difficult. And then I learn, oh, I can make decisions and make wrong decisions and recover from them. And I'm going to learn so that next time I do that, I mean, that's the beauty of, like, we live out west, so all my videos are of us hiking. Mm. Hiking is such a wonderful learning experience of like, right? Like, now I'm in this situation. Do I keep going or am I going to get hurt? I've seen those tracks before and this sign in the weather. Like, what you're doing for your daughter is you're teaching her how to think, right? And so partly what I love about how you live your life is you don't give in to the peer pressure, right? As a mom, you hear it, you feel it, but you're like, no, I trust my instincts. And then you follow with that. So your daughter's going to crush it in the real world.
Yeah, this is something that I was thinking about earlier in our conversation, because there's over controlling, or maybe the helicopter parenting and engineering every moment of every day. Where do we leave room for initiation for boys and girls? You know, you use the hiking example. It's so great because you start to read the environment. You understand what time of day it is based on where the sun is. You know that the sun sets over that peak. And, you know, depending on the time of year, the weather is going to drop a certain amount of time after 5 p.m. I mean, you start registering a lot about the environment. And for me, that's a type of initiation that boys and girls don't really have anymore, because we are not spending as much time outside, and, you know, we are not asking our kids to participate in what we think is maybe, you know, I don't know, like we want to keep them entertained, let's say, is what it is. And so we're like filling their day with activities or sports or clubs or things online or classes, rather than just going outside and like figuring out how things work, you know, or creating those opportunities. I know in cities it's hard, but there are parks and there are, even walking around a city, you can learn a lot just from observing and walking.
You could explore, like, I remember, like, we go overseas and we speak over and we'll spend time there and we'll go like in an old city and just walk around and look at stuff and go through a door and up like a spiral staircase. I would say this summer, I'm going to do this a podcast on it. Practice boredom with your kids. I would have specific days. Mom, Dad, what are we doing today? Boredom day. I want you to encounter boredom because I believe you're capable of using your creativity and your imagination to overcome that yourself. Mm-hmm. And here's another thing, Ayla, that's really hard for parents because, well, I want to get my kids outside, but they just complain. Well, duh, of course they're going to complain. They're not going to be like, yeah, I want to go out in the heat and be uncomfortable. It's like we all, like if I could just sit and be on a screen all day, pretty comforting and easy in my control. So when we had these camps at our home, we got kids outside and they would always complain, why do we have to walk? I'm tired. My legs are going to fall off. Like, you lead, you just keep doing it. Find some woods, even in your neighborhood, if it's a small strand of trees that they left up. Do treasure hunts, hide stuff out there, do mischievous stuff. Like, I grew up in an era where I just saw that look in your eyes. I like that. That was like, yes, mischief.
I did too. I was like in LA, like my mom wouldn't know where I was. We're like riding bikes and throwing, you know, fruits over the neighbor's wall and seeing if we could, you know, knock down a rake. I mean, we were just doing all kinds of things.
Yes, we threw snowballs at cars in the winter and we did, but we were given space to do that.
Yeah.
And our kids organized sports. Everything now is organized with an adult. And so I get this all the time. Well, my seven-year-old wasn't listening to the coach teaching him. And I was like, he shouldn't be right now, right? I'm not saying be disrespectful, but why should a seven-year-old sit and like, well, he doesn't wait his turn. When we were kids, we just went out in the backyard and we were kicking the ball and we were knocking each other down and we played and we learned the rules because the older kids we played with dominated us a little bit and they taught us the rules. And so I would encourage you, free play. Parents, this is really hard. Get outside and play with your kids. And I'm not being sexist with this, but I guarantee you in any neighborhood, if there is a man who is outside playing, all the other kids will, when we had these camps, other kids would come to our house and they'd be like, what are you doing? Because it's so rare to find an adult out playing with the kids who's not organizing and telling them what to do. Or on the phone. Like Casey, our son, when he was like 11 and 12, we always had kids over at our house because I didn't trust other parents. I didn't want my son at their house. I don't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. But they love this. I would be inside and they would come on in and play like a ding dong ditch game. And I would have to run and chase them down in the neighborhood with like a flashlight tag. And you know what was the interesting part? They liked when I caught them and I kind of throw them down on the ground. And they liked the roughhousing.
Yeah.
And there was something to that. And so rather than being on the video games, and that it's a really hard thing, but if you get out and play with them and you play those old games, they're like, oh, this is fun. And so, but it's hard and it takes activity and you're tired. But I would say, push yourself this summer. Have some nights that you play the games we played during this. Pick a neighbor that you don't like. I'm kidding, you can't do that.
Everyone has cameras now, you can't.
I know, Ring doorbell has ruined childhood. Now you have to be more, now you have to get your strong-willed child to strategize and disable the Ring doorbell.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, you've got
That's what
that.
it is.
That's problem-solving
I
skills.
know. What did my daughter want to do? Oh, yeah, she's like, we can put a mirror in front of it, and that way they'll never know. I mean, she's so into mischief, you know. She.
I love your daughter. I want to invest in your daughter. Like, if your daughter were the stock, I would buy stock in your daughter because she's probably, like most strong-willed kids, is going to have like a little rocky start to her path. But then
Yeah.
she'll figure it out, and then everything comes together. See, some company is going to, well, she probably won't work for a company because she'll own her own business, but somebody is going to value that story and be like, yeah, I once had this idea that we could trick it by getting a mirror. And they're going to be like, that's what I'm looking for. I want creativity. I want some mischief that says, hey, let's look at this a different way. Not someone who just, and I'm not knocking kids who go to school and just follow the rules and do what they're told, but there's limited value to that in the real world nowadays. We want your mis I, that's a gr that mischievous, a mischievous. Okay, I'm going to do something on that sometime.
Yeah, the mischief is important. I mean, it is, you know, and understanding boundaries is important too. And that's something that I think we lose in the conventional school system is actually understand. It's funny because it seems counterintuitive, but what I've noticed is like you stop listening to your body in that conventional system. Like, you know, even if you have to go to the bathroom, you have to wait until you're allowed to go. You can't just get up and go. And, you know, that's something that for my daughter is like, I can't believe I have to ask permission to go to the bathroom. Like, it seems for her, it's just that doesn't compute for her, you know? And so I think that it feels like this teacher has really, they don't have boundaries with us. They control the body function. They control when we eat. They control when we do this. They control when we do that. And we start to just lose that sense of drawing a boundary of what we need. So I find that that's one of the many ways that we kind of move into adulthood, not really knowing our own boundaries and saying this thing doesn't feel right or this dynamic doesn't feel right, but I'm being told it's what I'm supposed to do, so I'm going to go ahead and do it. So I think we do, there are some things that are so valuable for children that are just lost in that conventional system. And if they're in the conventional system, I guess the best way to try to create that foundation is just to do it at home.
Sure.
You
Yeah,
know?
do it at home and then give, you've got to work within the system. Like our son did every kind of different schooling
Yeah.
because he got kicked out of places and whatever. And we did homeschooling, we did them all. But I would tell him at times, I'd say, look, you don't always have to follow the rules, but you always have to do the right thing.
Yeah.
Right. And so there was a time, one of the schools, some kids were getting bullied. And I said, look, you don't bully other people. I know the rule is, no tolerance for anything. But I said, if another kid's getting picked on, you need to step in because he was a big kid. And I said, you step in because that's the right thing. And if you get in trouble for stepping in and you get suspended, we'll all take a few days off of work and we'll go celebrate the fact that
Yeah.
you did the right thing. But definitely at home, I think this summer for moms and dads, practice that when you don't have all the pressure of allowing them some autonomy. Not like, hey, choose whenever you want to go to bed. Like you've got to have boundaries on things, but start releasing yourself from that and watch them come alive. And then talk about it of like, okay, so you just made a choice to do X. What'd you learn from that? Because now they're going to verbalize, well, I learned that I probably shouldn't eat that at times or right before bed, or because then my stomach was upset. Okay, good. So what are you going to do differently next time? And I think that kind of conversation versus, you know what? I have told you for years that you shouldn't do that. It's like, no, have conversations. It's not releasing like your authority as a parent. It is, I'm having the confidence to say, I believe you're capable of making these decisions, and I want you to own them from an early age so that you can say, yeah, that wasn't a great choice, but it's your body. Like, if you
Right.
choose to eat that, guess what? Your stomach's going to be upset. Here's what I've found. I just didn't. And I love that phrasing as kids get older. Is I use that with Casey a lot. Hey, Case, here's something I've found in life. It just tends to work better when you do it this way.
Yeah.
And then I walk out of the room. So I'm planting some wisdom and some seeds and then giving him space to process it. Because right. I didn't want him to say, good lecture, Dad, you're right. I'm going to incorporate that into my life right away. Right? Like, I plant the seed and then I let it grow and I model it. And then eventually they come around and they usually do it the more, I wanted to say like the right way, my way, but they usually end up making good choices. And then you can say, hey, I like how you wrestled with that idea. One more, I know we probably have to close up. The strong-willed child is always going to reject what you want first before they own it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll reject your faith. They'll reject your deeply held beliefs because I don't want to believe just because my mommy and daddy do
right.
or a teacher told me to. They want to wrestle with it. And so I give them space to wrestle with it. And I create that safety to say, hey, make some bad choices here within these boundaries. You're going to be all right, but experiment a little bit. So not experiment with drugs. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, it's just the safety to make choices within a boundaried system, right? Or a structure. I'll give this example of the park. I'll have to pull up the study, but they did a study on children who went to this park that had a fenced perimeter. I've mentioned this in other conversations, and the parents were like, okay, go and play. And the kids actually stayed closer to the parents and closer to the play structure. But then when they went to a park, you know, that didn't have that fenced in area, the kids actually weren't playing with as much ease, and they kept looking back at the parents, and the parents were a little bit more like over them. And so when we actually, like, what I learned from that is like, okay, when we can create that boundaried area for them and then give them this huge area to explore, they're actually more willing, more creative, more curious, and we're more at ease, right? But it's not like for me, when it's like, okay, go and scroll the internet, like I would never let my daughter at her age do that, because it's a whole world that I don't even feel comfortable with that. And I know that she would be completely overwhelmed and probably get into something that she didn't intend to get into. And then, you know, the damage is done. So when I say to her, you have these options, and I give her like 10 options of things that she can do, which is like a drawing music on this, you know, on this screen. And if we're going to do computer time, and now I'm at ease because she's been giving all these choices and now she can do whatever she'd like within this boundaried area. And I don't have to sit there and control it or worry or put parental monitors or all that stuff.
Man, that's so good.
You know,
that is so good. I love, there's something about how you told that and just saying she's safe, I'm safe, and now I don't have all that anxiety over it.
Yeah. In my work with birth, I always see, you know, the parents are like, the baby's agitated, they have colic, and what do I need to remove from the diet? And I'm like, let's just talk about what's going on with you. And all of the stress, because children are just extensions or energetic extensions of us. They're mirroring us all the time. And so even with babies, a lot of these irritations and frustrations that the babies are feeling, that they're trying to communicate in their own language, can often be understood once the mother is able to ground herself. It's not like, I need to find the drops and I need to take them to a specialist. And I need, sometimes, and most of the time, when they can get their nervous system to a more regulated place, the baby then, you know, feeds with more ease, isn't as irritated, sleeps a little longer. I mean, I've seen it time and time again, you know. I mean,
animals are like that, right?
Yes,
like
yes.
They feel like your kids. I always say with strong-willed kids, when you walk into their bedroom in the morning, like if you have to wake them up for school, Your kids know what mood you're in before you even know what your mood you're in. Because they can pick up on, hey, honey, honey, we need to get up. We need, uh-oh, mom's a little stressed, dad's stressed. I hear that clip tone. That means my parents anxious. So now I'm going to dive under the covers because nothing is going to go well this morning. Because no matter what I do, I didn't eat my breakfast quickly enough. I didn't brush my hair the right way. I didn't get in a car. Like they can tell that from like your body posture. That's why I like sitting a lot. Because body posture, I can create a defensive response in a child simply by the way I stand. When I sit and change my tone of voice, complete at ease, takes away power struggles. Tone of voice is such an interesting thing, but I love that you share that.
Yeah, it really is. The morning routine says a lot. I think that's a great way to take the temperature on the family's ecosystem and maybe where we
Yeah,
can
that's
like
stress.
make adjustments, you know? Well, one thing that I want to close with, because this is something you do bring up a lot in your work, are the phrases that we say to our children that actually just continue to echo into adulthood and actually form the way in which that adult perceives themselves and perceives the world. And you said something in a video recently where, you know, there's the daydreamer kids. Like, my daughter is a total daydreamer. Like, she's like imagining things and solving problems. And then, you know, the teacher's like, well, it's, you know, taking her 30 minutes to do this. And all the other kids have, and I'm like, and like, you know, like, what are we like solving, you know, some major global crisis? Like, it's okay. Like, she's just, and then at the end of it, she's really satisfied with what she's accomplished, but the timing thing. So, you know, I say to her, similar to what you said, like, seems like you're thinking a lot, you know, you're thinking a lot about it, you're solving a lot of problems. Do you want to share? I'd love to know what you're thinking about so that it feels a little bit more celebrated than condemning, for her to spend more time on it. So, could you talk a little bit about how we can reframe these phrases so they're actually doing good and creating positive momentum for the children rather than creating kind of like a life script that they are bad and wrong?
Your child is taking too long to do work. Well, now the child will start to internalize, I'm slow. There's something wrong with my brain. I'm not as smart as other kids. I need to change. And that's the narrative for millions of kids gets internalized in, I'm not as good. I'm not as smart. And these are really bright kids. But with a simple switch of mindset, like I love in a classroom, if a kid's daydreaming, for the teacher to say, where did you just go? Because you have this amazing imagination. And when you're up there thinking, man, you went someplace cool. Could you tell me that after class or tell me now? And then to rewire and say, of course. And I love the phrase, of course you take longer because you are a deeper processor of information. Because when some new information comes in, you look at it from three or four different angles. Look, all the other kids are just regurgitating, telling the teacher what she or he wanted to hear, but you actually consider it and it takes time. And you also feel emotions, you feel things deeply. And that's what artists do and problem solvers do. And so when I start, I'm not lying. I'm not making something up, right? It's not like, well, spirited child, right? It's not like I'm just putting a nice label on it. I'm speaking the truth. You process information more slowly because you're a deeper processor. And that will be, you know, it's, here's one, and then I'll finish. It's the child who's very particular. Who, this was a podcast once when the mom said, oh, dinner's going to be ready in 5 minutes, but the oven said 7 minutes. And the
It's my
daughter,
daughter.
yeah, actually, mom, actually, it's going to be ready in 7 minutes. Well, my daughter is so disrespectful. Honey, instead, I can say, you know what I love about that trait? It shows me that you're conscientious and precise. And see, that trait is really useful if you're going to be an architect, a dentist, an engineer, right? So So it's not lying and putting like, let's just put a positive spin. It's no, that's truth that speaks to that child's heart of like, I do like precision. I do process. I do think about things deeply. Why is everybody saying that's wrong? And that's my big fear with our kids in traditional schools is they internalize, I'm not as smart, I'm not a good kid. And it's like, no, you just have skills and thought processes that are not rewarded in this system. So at home, man, throw off a lot of those arbitrary things that we want our kids to kind of fit in and conform with. Our son is so good at leadership. Is our son good at following directions? Not really, but you know what he is? He's really responsible. So when his boss says, Case, here's the objective tonight, he's like, good, I can run with that. I lead a team, we'll get it done. And his boss knows he's got it covered. And that's what I taught Casey. I was like, you want your manager to net tell them the first day, if you give me a responsibility, you will never have to worry about it getting done. You may not like the way I do it, but it will get done and I'll be responsible. So I didn't want a kid who was compliant. We wanted a responsible kid. Our son isn't good at checking off boxes, but he's really responsible. He will always do the right thing. And it's just a little bit of a mindset shift. We want our kids to get good grades. It was like, no, we want to raise curious kids who love to learn. And we had that on our fridge so that everything that we heard from the schools got funneled through. We want a curious child who loves to learn. Well, Casey isn't reading the books that are assigned to him. Okay, because you chose books that are boring and stupid, and that an 8-year-old boy, right? Like, Ayla, I read two books at all times. I'm reading a paperback and a Kindle book. I choose books that I'm curious about. It's kind of like the food thing. Hey, child, I'm going to pick a topic that you're not interested in, and then you have to read it. And it's like, I get it, but at the same time, it's like, no, I just want my child reading about stuff that they're really curious about. I don't care what grade level they're on. And if you do it that way, they will read books at a higher grade level because they're motivated by the topic.
Absolutely. I mean, my daughter, it's like her focus is animals and mysteries, and that's all she really cares about, And she's, and her teacher's like, I can't, this is a sixth grade level, and she's in third grade. But then when she's asked to read about other things, it's the classic example you just shared, it's not working for her, but it's not because she doesn't know how, or it's not because she doesn't respect the teacher or something like that. It's simply because would I do that, right? Like, do I want to read about dental surgery, for an extended? Probably not. I mean, maybe, but I'm curious about everything. But, it's the same thing. So why don't we extend that grace to children, And I think of all the times that, these children think that they're dumb or they're slow or they're incapable because they're in a system that doesn't reward them for who they are and what their strengths are. And then they grow up self-betraying and getting jobs, in a corporate field, for example, because that's what maybe, or in a certain field. And that's, they struggle with it. They have to go on medication to even keep the job and be functional in the job, rather than saying, maybe it's time for me to ask myself where I flourish. And maybe it's starting from scratch and saying, I never really was taught to figure out where I flourished or what my strengths are, but maybe it's time to learn now and figure that out. But I do see that a lot of those challenges come with us trying to fit ourselves into a mold that we just, it's not who we are.
Well, modern, we talked about modern day parents. My mom and dad, they didn't really know anything about me, right? They didn't have school testing. They were like, he goes to school, he seems like a happy kid. And we know everything about our kids. And I know you've seen this with parents. Because we know every weakness we have, And because there are specialists for everything, oh, let's take her to a specialist for this, and let's take her specialist for this. We end up, and this is a huge warning, do not spend your child's childhood spending 90% of your energy trying to fix their weaknesses. Yeah. I want you to spend 90% of their energy cultivating their gifts and passions, because you're successful in life to the degree to which you use your natural gifts, talents, and passions. I have a lot of weaknesses, and I know that. I don't worry about those. Like I have very poor short-term memory. I don't really work on that. You know why? I have post-it notes. I write myself emails. I put notepads down by the door so I don't forget. Why? Because it would take me so much mental energy to, okay, I got to remember. And then that crowds out my creativity and ingenuity in other areas. The reason I wear the same clothes all the time, if you watch our Instagram, I wear the same hat, same clothes every day, is one, I'm a guy. But two, because now I don't have to think about it.
Yeah.
Right? And so spend the childhood cultivating what your kids' strengths are. You're just going to have to run counter to society and school with that. And no, I don't have to fix that. My child has never loved math. She or he is probably not going to be a physicist, and that's okay. But I don't have to create so much stress over fitting in. They will flourish so much more.
Greg, thank you so much for sharing this. This is, I know you were coming off of this really powerfully charged podcast episode that you did beforehand, and you brought such, you know, just beautiful wisdom to the conversation. And I know it's even helpful for me to reflect on this, because as much as I feel that I'm doing things in the most alignment possible with my daughter and my truth, like, I'm still human, right? Which is the thing to remember with all of us. Like, I'm still a human who had a past, who had a certain childhood, and I'm always in motion with alchemizing that. And children are incredibly resilient.
I had such a good time, and I like absorbed like that energy coming from you. It's like, I'm going to take my shoes off and walk outside today.
Just to honor
your daughter. And I will. It's almost warm here.
Awesome.